Does the sheer amount and nature of the suffering that we experience cast doubt on the existence of God? Well, join us for an evil discussion on this episode of The Unapologetic Show. Thinking Christians, welcome to the Unapologetic Show, where we defend truth without compromise with Dr. Bobby Conway, the One Minute Apologist. I'm your host, Tim Hall. Now, Bobby, there is no shortage of truly awful things that happen in our world. I'm reminded of a friend that lost an unborn or preborn child to a genetic condition, the horrors of COVID, just the tragedy of COVID right now, the tornadoes that recently ripped through the Midwest, like several hundred miles, completely wiped cities off the map, and several other things, several other examples that we could give. But all of these terrible things and these tragic events seem to cast doubt on God's existence. Bobby, from your perspective, where is God in the midst of all of this suffering?
It's a question that many people do have, and you're discussing and distinguishing between two types of suffering and evil, and it would be moral evil and natural evil. Mm-hmm. And natural evil is going to be things like a tsunami or an earthquake or a tornado, COVID-19,
right?
Unless, of course, somebody could prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that a person is the one that was the cause of that.
Yeah.
Then I would say the moral evils are the evils at the hands of a person, right? And I think as it relates to the world that we live in, when we experience any of these types of evils, depending upon one's relationship to God or one's mental mindset with God, they might feel as if God has completely left them in the tragedy, and they will use that as justification to deny the existence of God altogether. I think one of the dangers that ends up happening in this, Tim, is first off, you have two major contentions, I think, that the atheist can have against Christianity that is hard to answer at times, and that would be the problem of suffering and evil, and then the problem of divine hiddenness.
Right.
Well, it's sometimes when you're experiencing the problem of suffering and evil that it seems like God is hidden,
right?
And I think we do a disservice at times to our churches when we try to give this perfect analogical relationship between God and maybe parents. For example, as parents, we know that when our kids suffer and they struggle, we do whatever we can to intervene. And the problem of suffering and the dark night of the soul that we often go through is when we're experiencing some of these horrendous evils, it seems as if God doesn't intervene. It seems as if he doesn't remove some of the obstacles. It seems as if he doesn't show up. And that's because we've end up expecting God to operate in relationship with us, just like maybe our parents would operate with us. And we have to realize that while the Bible does use some analogical language of God as like a father, if we impose on God the way that we would act when we see someone that suffer, and then we go, why, God, did you not intervene? That can set us up to be disillusionment, and that can set us up for disillusionment and cause us to really struggle.
And talk to me a little bit about, talk to the audience and myself a little bit about where the cross kind of fits into some of that, where the crucifixion fits into this idea of suffering and how that can maybe give comfort to people that are experiencing, whether it's natural or moral evil, but there's kind of in the midst of that suffering. What role does the cross play in that?
I think what Christianity even helps us to see is it's a worldview that fits within the explanations that we give for the problem of suffering, evil, and divine hiddenness. In fact, you see that drama played out in different figures like Job or Habakkuk experiencing tremendous suffering, also wondering, God, where are you? Well, Jesus on a cross in the same way. You know, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? He's quoting Psalm 22. But nevertheless, Jesus is the second person of the Trinity, and he willingly went to the cross and he suffered on our behalf. And so we have this moral exemplar in Jesus that shows us that through suffering and through agony, the greatest gift that was ever offered to the world comes through the cross.
Yeah, Yeah, no, that's excellent. Before we continue, I do want to remind our listeners that this show is in an audio-only podcast as well. So hello to our podcast listeners. Thank you so much for checking us out on whatever you podcast app that you are using to listen to us on. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that you can find this show on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/oneminuteapologist. And one of the ways that you can support this show that's completely free is just to subscribe to our channel, like this video, and share it with your social network. If you're interested in supporting this channel in other ways, you can buy some merch from us, some 1 Minute Apologist merch, and you can find that below any of our videos on our YouTube channel. You can also join our financial support team, 1MinuteApologist.com, and click on donate. So I just want to make sure that everybody knows that this is a listener-supported show and listener-supported ministry, and we want to keep providing these resources for you. While you're at our website, you can also sign up for our weekly email that we send out every Monday with apologetic resources. So we're going to get back to our evil conversation here with talking about some definitions of evil. You kind of foreshadowed a little bit for us and talked about a moral evil and natural evil, but just how would we define what is and what isn't evil in the first place? What are some different definitions that we're that are out there?
Well, I don't think we want to fall into the fact that you've got this, you know, good God, right? And then you have this evil God, this dualism, so to speak. Right. And not only that, we want to be cautious to not define evil as a thing in itself, right? Okay. Like, you know, when we talk about evil, it's not like there's this thing called evil out there, this subject called evil that is out to get us. You know, what we realize is there are actions that can be evil, right? Or evil can be the privation of a good.
Okay.
And so it's helpful for us then to realize that, you know, we can do evil things as people, or Satan can do evil things, you know, as a demonic being.
Right.
Or demons can do evil things as demonic beings. But there's not this thing behind Satan that exists by the name of evil.
Right.
And so basically, if you take something good like sexuality, well, sexuality can be good in the context of marriage between a husband and wife, but you take it outside of that context and deprive it of its context, then it can be used in an evil way, right? Money can be used in a good way,
right?
But if you use it in a way whereby you're trying to pay for prostitutes, for example,
right,
now you're using something in an evil way.
Right.
So in other words, it's a privation of a good.
Okay. So I think that's really interesting. I think there's some of the definitions that I've heard. We talked about this before on the show, where Sam Harris kind of has this idea of evil is that which harms people, right? So anything that harms people, and then you can objectively measure that harm. And so therefore, if you can objectively measure the harm and such action does harm somebody, well, now you have objective evil. You have something that meets that definition. How would you respond to something like that, that kind of definition?
Well, I think it would be a tough way to really come to any good conclusion on, you know, what's going to be the criteria. Like, for example, does Sam Harris apply that same criteria to people he harms who are believers of different belief systems? You know, there are people who might have been better off with their belief system, and then he goes and rattles them, and then they feel completely empty because of that. Well, you know, anything that does harm to people, what exactly does that mean?
Right.
And so it's really hard to come up with an objective criteria for that, because what harms one individual may not feel like harm to another individual.
Right.
And so is the criteria going to look like Sam Harris?
Right.
And that's where we have to, you know, be cautious.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that you're pointing out is that, like, it ends up becoming some sort of like democratic exercise, right? Just like, raise your hand if this harms you, if you think this harms you. Okay. Well, most people say that is harmful, and we just throw out the other ones, right? It's like, well, hold on a second. Wait a minute. That makes all of reality.
And that criteria is always changing, right?
It's always changing, and just makes it this, you know, democratic exercise. Well, I think that's a really good kind of foundation for where we're headed here in this conversation, which is really this idea of evil and suffering, you know, being an evidence against God, casting doubt on God's existence. And there's several, you know, philosophers that have kind of laid out what we call the evidential problem of evil. And that's just a big philosophical term, right? There's the logical
the probabilistic.
Problem of evil. Yeah, and there's the emotional problem of evil. And so we're going to focus a little bit here in our remaining time on kind of this evidential problem of evil. And essentially, it's that there is these, you know, instances of suffering, and we all agree that we've talked about it. Some of us have experienced that, but we also have this idea of this good God, and why would a good God allow any of this suffering to happen? And then oftentimes there becomes this scale that gets placed, right? And yeah. So you look at the amount of suffering that has happened, you know, through the amount of, you know, existence, all of existence, right? And you look at the goodness of God and you say, well, why wouldn't he have stopped any of that? And so you're just saying, man, just on balance, I look at the amount of evil that's happening in our world and the amount of evil that has happened, and I look at the good God that's supposed to be out there, and it just seems like he should eliminate all of this stuff. So why do you think that kind of argument, again, we're not going through the whole logical argument, why do you think that argument is so persuasive or so compelling for some people?
Well, you just alluded to the logical problem of evil, okay? So if you have the logical problem of evil, and then you have the evidential problem mm-hmm. of evil. The logical problem of evil, thanks to the work of somebody like an Alvin Plantinga, this was basically critics saying that, you know what, it's not logical that God and the amount of suffering that's in the world, that it can't coexist. Mm-hmm. But Alvin Plantinga, a great Christian philosopher, really helped settle that case by showing, you know what, we have free will in this culture that we live in, and mm-hmm. the people have always had free will, and there is a good explanation for why you could have a good God and there could be evil because of people's free will if right. they're truly free. But then having solved that problem, we're in the arena of philosophy of religion, that's recognized that that's not a contradiction, that there would be evil and that a good God can exist. But a more modest argument is the evidential or probabilistic argument from evil. And that is, like you said, Tim, it is less probable that God exists than he doesn't, given the amount of evil and suffering in the world. Mm-hmm. That's harder for people to argue against, because it does seem like, man, there is so much suffering and there's so much evil in this world. And what's the point of it all?
Right.
Like, it seems like there is some suffering and some evil that is just so atrocious that it doesn't seem like there could ever be a good point for it.
Right.
And this causes people then to say, given that, it seems like it's very probable that God doesn't exist, but we wouldn't want to come to that conclusion.
Right.
And number one, I would say, as Christians, we should remember we make a cumulative case for the existence of God. So while we can talk about how, you know, the problem of suffering and evil or the problem of divine hiddenness, those can be difficult for us to address. Thankfully, I think that we have answers to all of that.
Right.
But when you start bringing in all of the positive evidence that we have for the existence of God, like the different arguments, like the cosmological, the teleological, some might even pull out the ontological, the different various moral arguments. When we start considering fine-tuning and DNA, and we start considering the whole panoply of evidence, it's phenomenal to think about the fuller cumulative case. But what we're looking at is a slice of the pie.
Right, right.
And I think that we can concede that there is a lot of suffering and evil that we don't always know the point and the reason for. But that doesn't mean that there's not a point.
Right. No, and again, I would echo exactly what you're saying, that you could then go to other lines of evidence, right? So this doesn't have to be your single argument and that's it, right?
Exactly.
But I think one of the other things, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, is it really goes back to how you're defining evil. So you can't have something like gratuitous or unjustified evil when an evil thing is a privation of the good, because you have to have the the good, right? You have to have God's nature, which is the root of the goodness, in order to be able to define anything as
exactly.
evil. So you're assuming your definition. We're not agreeing on the definition of evil when you're making your argument, right? Yeah. And I think that's problematic. How would you respond to something like that?
Well, I think that what's interesting is you're really talking about kind of a standard here.
Yeah.
Like, what is evil if there's no such thing as the good,
yeah.
right? And we as Christians would define God as the good. What we're talking about, objectively speaking, so. Like, you could subjectively say, this is good, and if you don't, you know, attain to that, then that is bad.
Right.
But we're saying that as believers, that if there is a God who exists, mind independent of us, who created this world that is immensely powerful, all-knowing, loving, and those types of attributes that we yeah. ascribe to God, then we recognize that how does this fit in a world with so much suffering and evil?
Yeah.
And I think that we can say that there is explanations that God can have for why there's so much suffering and why there's so much pain and why there's so much evil that we can't understand this side of heaven.
Right.
But the atheist wants to deny that God can't exist because of so much suffering and evil. They also have to answer, well, what are they objectively comparing their standard of evil against? And right. I think that's what you're getting to.
Yeah, no, I that's exactly what I was getting at. And I think that's a really interesting, just, you know, again, it's an interesting thought experiment to kind of walk down that road. But I think, too, the other thing that they might look at is there's a story by the philosopher Rowe, who kind of popularized this evidential or probabilistic argument from evil. And he talks about, like, oh, you think about a forest somewhere, and lightning comes down and hits a tree and starts a forest fire, and there's a fawn that dies in the forest fire. How can God have a good reason for allowing such a thing to happen, because that animal suffered. The animal suffered for no apparent reason yeah. to us. And how would you respond to something like that? There's no yeah. apparent reason why this fawn would die horribly, a horrible death in this fire. So, and that must be an unjustified or gratuitous evil.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say, and I've read that story by Rowe as well before, and I think that while that might be clever as a story, I'm just not in a position to know what an omniscient God's reasons can be for allowing everything to happen. But what I can say is that the problem of suffering and evil, our worldview as Christians explains it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we live in a fallen world where lightning strikes trees and yeah. trees fall and things like this happen. I mean, this is exactly what God told us and predicted,
right.
Like, you know, in the day you eat of this, you shall die. And we see that the consequences begin to unfold. So what God does, what we see is God does give us a kind of a heads up that right. when you fall into sin, these are going to be some of the consequences.
Yeah.
We see in scripture that, you know, the earth groans in Romans 8, you know, for the glorification of creation to take place. So we have God's promise that he's going to undo this. We have God's promise that there is a way for us to be forgiven.
Mm.
We have an explanation for the evils and the suffering in the world, but we don't know the point of all the particularities. And yep. so just because we don't know the point of the particularities in this moment doesn't mean that at a later moment we might not know, and that in every moment, God always knows the purpose for which why things happen. And so I think that an atheist has a tremendous amount of evidence on them to be able to say, well, I mean, you could just flip it like, okay, you want me to explain how in the world could there be a good God that would allow so much suffering and evil?
Mm-hmm.
Well, how can you guarantee that God doesn't exist just because there is suffering and evil?
Right.
And so we can turn the question around, and we can probably both admit that this is not an easy discussion, but at least our worldview makes sense of it. Like, on the atheistic worldview, there really are no values yeah. that natural selection thinks about.
Right.
Natural selection's not concerned with categories of evil. It's concerned with survival.
Yeah.
So even the fact that we're determined, you know, and Sam Harris, by the way, doesn't even believe in free will.
Right.
So how in the world can we trust your opinion
right.
when you're just operating according to the deterministic methods of natural selection? Why should we trust your right. theories as if we can freely make a decision about it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, and I think that's an excellent point. One of the things that I like to do, and I thought this is where you're going, but you didn't, so I'll add it in here, is this idea of the atheist has then the problem of good, right? So
absolutely.
How are you defining anything as good? Because again, you've flattened out all actions to be essentially amoral, sans, you know, just an agreed upon definition. So there are good things. We've all experienced good things in our life. Maybe some people on balance have experienced more
yes.
you know, things they would say aren't, but there are good things. We can look at the world and say, wow. And so you have to give an explanation for the problem of the good. So, and our few remaining minutes here, I would love for you to, maybe we can take a little bit of a turn, and talk a little bit more pastorally about this problem, because I think this is often one of the triggers or one of the mm-hmm. the catalysts for people that are starting to question their faith, is that often the response when something tragic happens, like I described at the beginning, is everything happens for a reason. And while that is a verse in Romans 8 that, you know, that God has a reason for everything that does, and that's, you know, theologically true and philosophically true, it's not often helpful in the moment right. when somebody's suffering. So from a pastoral and kind of an apologetic approach, how should we approach somebody that is bringing this argument to us, or that we know have experienced recent suffering, a death of a loved one from because of COVID or something else that
yeah.
is—
Well, now you're talking about the emotional problem of evil, right? And so this is the one that really hits home. So while we can make arguments that would not compromise and should not compromise our belief in God's existence at the expense of suffering and evil, we do need to recognize that it's hard sometimes for our emotions to catch up. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure we can all envision going through certain circumstances where these arguments might logically be helpful, but I don't know how much they're going to help us emotionally.
Right.
I know, for example, when I went through my dark night of the soul, and it seemed like God was just hidden from me for several years, and I agonized, I could intellectually know the arguments to make, but man, my emotions just felt it. And so I think that what we could say to people who are suffering and who are going through difficulties is we need to just be there for them. We need to love them. We need to validate their pain.
Yeah.
We need to say that we're sorry that they're suffering and struggling. We don't need to turn out to be like Job's wife or Job's friends.
Right.
You know, we don't need to say, curse God and die. We don't need to say the reason you're suffering is because of sin in your life. We need to let them know that they're not alone, mm-hmm. that there have been other people who have went through horrific times. We need to let them know that there is a way forward. We need to just be there as friends and listen and not feel like we need to provide these arguments. Sometimes the greatest argument is just the power of presence.
Right. Yeah. And again, sometimes the opportunity might present itself at a later time, maybe, you know, further down the road after the suffering, to be able to talk about some of these more, you know, philosophical or more theological points to it. But yeah, I agree. In that moment, you're really just trying to seek to be there with them, to come alongside them, to, you know, to help in any way that you can. And I think as people begin to process some of what happened and maybe some of what happened before that tragic event, that's where we can step in and say, yeah, there's some theological questions here that we, you know, want to look at and we want to answer. So any final thoughts on, you know, being pastoral when it comes to the problem of suffering and evil?
I mean, I just think that the prosperity gospel, the danger of that is it really sets people up to be disillusioned as well, because the truth is life hurts, and God's favorite pitch, as I've often said before, is the curveball.
Yeah.
And sometimes life just throws us a big curve, and we hurt and we suffer and we agonize. But I'm thankful that the Christian worldview doesn't stay silent on the fact that we will suffer.
Right.
And I'm thankful that we can find people in the scriptures that have had experiences where God did seem hidden. But the Bible does talk about moral evils and natural evils, and it lets us know that there's a God who shares in our suffering through sending Jesus to die on a cross, and we can trust in him through the dark night of the soul.
Amen. Well, I appreciate your insight and covering this topic. I want to let our audience know as well that we have several courses that Bobby has taught. One of them is on mental health, one of them is on evangelism, and one is on apologetics. And so you can find those over at our website, oneminuteapologist.com, and click on take a course right there on the homepage, and you will have all three options right there. And as future courses come out, they'll be on that website as well. So if you're watching this sometime in the future and we have more courses than the three I just mentioned, you'll find them there as well. With that, we will meet you next time on The Unapologetic Show. You've been listening to Unapologetic with Dr. Bobby Conway, the 1 Minute Apologist. I am your host, Tim Hall. Be sure to listen to Bobby on Pastor's Perspective Monday through Thursday, as well as like, share, and subscribe to the 1 Minute Apologist YouTube channel, where we have over 1,000 videos. We would also like to remind you that this is a listener-supported program. We would greatly appreciate your support in any amount so we could continue to provide this ministry. If you would like to be a part of our team in any capacity, please visit our website at oneminuteapologist.com. And while you're there, check out all of Bobby's books, courses, and even invite him to speak at your church or event. Thank you for listening to Unapologetic, where we defend truth without compromise. This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.